In several of his letters, Stevenson declares Kidnapped the favourite of his books. It's an adventure yarn, of course, but it's also a retelling of history and a study of Scotland, Highland and Lowland. It became the favourite of many others since, including Henry James, Jorge Luis Borges and Hilary Mantel. As he was starting the book, Stevenson wrote to his friend William Henley, "I have a great story on hand, a boy's story, a crackler." But he was warned by his publishers not to make the story, or the characters, too Scottish. "You should avoid having much broad Scots in it. A little of that goes a long way with our readers." In fact, the language throughout is beautiful, both the Scots and the English. Muscular, witty, inventive, revelling in all the accents and differences that can be found within a nation.
Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson, dramatized in two parts by Chris Dolan. Episode 1.
I will begin the story of my adventures one morning early in the month of June, the year of grace, 1751. That morning is etched upon my very soul. The commencement of a journey that would take me across the whole of Scotland and expose me to peril, politics, and the greatest friendship a man can ever know. I was a lad, 17 years of age, the son of a poor country dominie in the forest of Ettrick, or so I had believed.
You Jacobites by name, Landonier. You Jacobites by name.
It was a grand thing being young, with a great opinion of myself and my plans, and no notion whatsoever of the ways of the world, and what was about to befall me.
Jacobites by name, Landonier. You Jacobites by name, Landonier.
My high spirits did not last the day. I was an orphan. All I had in the world was a letter left by my father. He had told me to make my way to a great house called Shaw's, north of Edinburgh. The letter was addressed to Mr. Balfour, some distant relative, perhaps, who would help me in my time of need.
Sir, excuse me. Am I on the right road for the House of Shaw's?
Shaw's? Why ever would you want to gang to the House of Shaw's? Blood built it, and blood will bring it down.
Sorry?
Good day to you.
For a great house, the nearer I drew to it, the drearier Shaw's appeared.
Hello?
There was a light inside. A meagre one, but a light all the same. I considered giving up my mission and returning a failure to Ettrick. But boyish anger got the upper hand.
Answer, I say! Open up! I'm here on the instruction of my father.
See this? It's a blunderbuss. And it's loaded.
Your form of welcome is different from that in my parish, sir.
Is that so? Then I will back there.
I come here with a letter for Mr. Ebenezer Balfour of Shaw's. Is he at home?
A letter? Then put it on the doorstep and be off with you.
Well, I shall do no such thing. I shall deliver it personally. It is a letter of introduction.
Oh, is it new? And who might you be?
I am David Balfour.
David? Then I tell me, is your father dead? Aye, he'll be dead. That's what brings you chap into my door. Give me the letter.
I shall not. It's addressed to Mr. Balfour himself.
And who do you think I am? Give me Alexander's letter.
You know my father's name.
It would be strange if I didn't. He was my born brother. Come over, Ben. You're kith and kin. Come, you'll be wanting a bite.
It was the barest room I had ever cast eyes on. And my uncle, if this fellow was to be believed, was as wretched-looking as his abode. A clay-faced, stooping creature, anywhere between 50 and 70 years.
Had ye sharp sit? Ye can stomach a drop of porridge. Now, the letter.
Yes.
You'll have read it, nae doubt.
I have not.
Aye, but you'll have hopes. Am I right?
I confess, when I learned I had well-to-do kinsfolk, I hoped they might help me in life. But I am no beggar, sir. I look for no favours.
Hoot, toot! Turn a fly up and a snuff at me. Well, I agree fine. Eat up. Your father was gay fond of his meat. Alexander's been long dead.
A month, sir.
He was a secret man, my brother. You'll never have spoken of me, aye.
Until this letter, and you have no other kin.
Deary me, aye. He never said muckle when he was a bairn. A strange nature of a man. But, Davy, I have a great notion of family. What's best to put you to, I wonder? The Lord, the ministry, or maybe the army?
I spoke once to the minister at Ettrick.
Talkin's for the women, Davy. I'll ask you to keep your tongue within your teeth. Nae letters, nae messages. I wouldna like us Balfours to be humbled before a Queen Helen Campbell's. Nae word to onybody.
I'll do as I'm bid, uncle. Though my father always said...
Don't mind, Divot. You shouldna speak to me about your father. That's where the fault is. What's mine is yours, Davy. Blood's thicker than water. Say nothing to nobody, and I'll do right by you. Davy, there's a wee bit siller I promised you afore you were born.
You did?
Nothing legal, you understand. A gentleman's agreement. Well, it has grown by now to be a matter of just precisely... exactly £40.
£40?
Aye. You see, I'm a canny man and strange with strangers, but my word is my bond.
Uncle, that is so kind of you.
Nay, thanks. I want nae thanks. It's a pleasure for me to do right by my brother's son.
I cannot take your money, uncle, without labouring for it.
I could do with some help here, it's true. If you're none too throttled after your travels, you could maybe start right now.
Of course. I am at your service.
There's a stair tower at the far end of the house. You can only run into it from the outside. Gang up the stairs and bring me down the chest that's at the top. There's papers you can sign.
Can I have a light, sir?
Nae lights in my house. I'm unco feared of fires. There's nae banisters, but the stairs are grand underfoot.
Out I went into the night. It had fallen blacker than ever, and I was glad to feel along the wall till I came to the tower door at the far end of what I now saw was an unfinished wing. The wall was wet and slippery. I kept close to the side and felt my way in the pitch darkness with a beating heart. The house of Shaw stood some 5 stories high. It was like clambering on an open scaffold. Once or twice I almost lost my footing. The steps, contrary to what my uncle had said, were of unequal height. Could it be that the old man had sent me deliberately on a severely risky mission? Soon I had to get down upon my hands and knees, and as slow as a snail, feeling every inch, I continued to ascend. Bats! I cursed my own father's brother. My hand slipped upon an edge and found nothing but emptiness beyond it. The stair itself was unfinished. To set a stranger mounting it in the night was to send him straight to his death. I was perched, teetering on a single loose step, 5 stories above the ground.
What kind of man are you?
Davy.
Sit where you are.
Is he a ghost?
Aye, you expected me dead, right enough.
No, no, not at all. I had forgotten. I meant to tell you.
Be quiet. You took me for a country yokel with neither wit nor courage. I took you for a good man. It seems we were both wrong. What cause do you have to cheat me, to attempt to kill me?
Ah, Davy, lad, you must kill me.
Ah, I do not. But no more talk tonight. I've had my fill of your company. Give me your keys. Out! Go on, get out!
No! No! You can't cast mute me in him!
Oh, I can. I intend to sleep safe and sound a few hours.
But the weather! Oh, Dee! Would you have me deep, Davy?
You'll survive. We'll speak in the morn.
Davy, no, please! We'll speak! If I last, we'll agree fine, Davy. Blood's thicker than water. Don, Davy, you near killed me.
It wasn't my intention, but it was yours to kill me.
Oh, Nick, you left me out in the wild. I'm welcome, old man, let me.
You were out for a couple of hours. Stop your belly aching. I needed sleep, and you'd have come at me with a dirk the moment I closed my eyes.
No, no, a misunderstanding, Davy. No, they're not. You went the wrong way.
And you'll be wanting me to try again.
No, no need for that. Oh, it got me thinking stuck outside there. I'll do right by you yet. And there. I'll mark it legal. You see, Davy, I'll have a venture with a certain mister who sees him. The captain of a trading brig, the Covenant. I have a letter for him here.
Let me see it.
You and me should walk over to the Queen's Ferry, and I could see to my business with the captain.
Why should I accompany you?
Well, maybe we can jog on to the lawyer, Mr. Rankeeler, and legislate your proper position in the Balfour family. I can tell you no of a mind to trust me. But you believe Rankeeler. He's highly respected. And he kens your feather.
I took the decision immediately. And once we had breakfasted, we set out on the road. I was going to a place of shipping where my uncle dare attempt no violence. My spirits rose at the prospect of a meeting with this lawyer, Rankeeler. My future might yet be safe. As the sun lay low that evening, we came to the top of a hill and looked down on the ferry in the Firth of Forth, out on which lay the Covenant. Even from a distance I could see there was a sea-going bustle on board. Yards were swinging into place. As the wind blew from that quarter, I could hear the song of the sailors as they pulled upon the ropes. I felt a mixture, I confess, of excitement at such a sight. And abhorrence. I'd heard too many terrible tales of life on the high seas.
I think it right to tell you, sir, there is nothing that will bring me on board that Covenant.
Why, no, lad. I'd have thought a young laddie would have liked to see the brig or ship.
Mr. Balfour.
Captain O'Season.
Proud to see you, Mr. Balfour. The wind's fair and the tide upon the turn. We'll see the old cold bucket burning on the Isle of May before tonight. And who be this young gentleman?
Davy here is something we need to speak of.
Aye? Well, shall we cross to the inn then? The better to sign papers.
Aye, man.
And then we go to see Mr. Rankeeler.
Hoot, hoot. Hoy, hodge your horses. The captain and I will tarry no more than an hour. Hey, horses.
Then I'll leave you to your business, gentlemen. I'd like to see the sea at closer quarters.
Even so far up the Firth, the smell of the sea was exceedingly salt and stirring. The Covenant was beginning to shake out her sails. Sailors, some in shirts, some in jackets, others with coloured handkerchiefs about their throats, one with a brace of pistols stuck into his pockets, two or three with bludgeons. The scene put me in thoughts of far voyages and foreign places. But my dreaming was interrupted by a man falling into step with me. He was, I discovered, the keeper of the inn where Captain Holseason and my uncle were presently convening.
Was you the lad that came with Ebenezer?
I did, sir.
You look to me like kin.
Do I?
Aye, there's a wee bit likeness. I hope that's where it ends.
We merely met one another along the road to town.
Aye, well, if you're proper strangers, you wouldn't know there's many would like to see him gurning in the end of the hangman's rope.
He seemed pleasant enough.
Oh, did he? Well, he was once a fine young fella, but that was before all the talk of him and Mr. Alexander.
Mr. Alexander?
His own brother. I'm not one for talking ill of folks, but he killed him. Oh, aye, that's what they say.
Good God, why?
For to get the hoose and the family heritage. He's a Balfour, as sure as you can.
Why? Was this Alexander the eldest son?
Indeed he was. What else would he have killed him for? Well, I can't dawdle here listening to your blithering.
What to believe of this man's gossip? Certainly not that my uncle had killed my father. That gentlest of men died at peace in his bed, with me by his side only a month before. But had Ebenezer somehow managed to make him leave covertly the House of Shaws? I looked forward all the more ardently to meeting Rankila. If there were any truth in the landlord's theories, then I was now one of the rich of the earth. Shaws belonged rightfully to me, a man with a house and broadlands who might mount his horse tomorrow.
Do you like my brig, young fellow?
Captain, everything upon the sea is a wonder to a countryman.
You seemed lost in a dwarm. Aye, well, the Covenant's maybe not the grandest of ships, but to my eye she is the queen of the seas.
You and he are finished your business. Then it is time to see Mr. Rankila.
Douse your sails a while. Mr. Balfour tells me great things of you. I wish I was for longer here that we might make the better friends. But come on board the Covenant for half an hour, till the ebb sets, and drink a bowl with me.
I would gladly, sir, if I hadn't business of my own to attend to.
Your uncle said you were fricked of ships. Mr. Ebenezer is making his way to Rankiller's now. We could set you ashore at the town pier, right by Rankiller's house. And I wouldn't mind a word with you about Ebenezer. He means mischief.
Well, in that case...
Come along. What can I bring you from the Carolinas? A roll of tobacco, Indian featherwork, the skin of a wild beast. Take your pick and say your pleasure. Mr. Rhea, bear away.
Aye, aye, sir.
So, how do you like being a sailor, son?
I'm a little unsteady. The country looks guy different from the sea, Captain.
There's your uncle, waiting on the pier.
We seem to be moving away from the coast. Are there rocks?
Are we? So we are.
Seize them, lads!
What?
No!
You're coming through.
No! Help me! Leave off me!
I was lost. With all my strength, I tried to pluck myself clear of Holseason's brutes. Just before everything went dark, I was spun around, and I saw back on the pier my uncle waving. And even at that distance, and on the point of senselessness, I could make out the look on his face, full of cruelty and triumph. I came to myself in darkness, in great pain, bound hand and foot, and deafened by the roaring of the sea, the thrashing of heavy sprays, the thundering of sails, and the shrill cries of seamen. The whole world heaved up and then rushed downward. I had no measure of time. Day and night were alike in that ill-smelling cavern of the ship's bowels. There fell upon me a blackness of despair, the remorse at my own folly, and a passion of anger at my uncle.
Aye, aye. How goes it? Dunt, right enough.
Help me.
Cheer up, man. The world's no done. You've made a bad start of it, but you'll make a better.
Mr. Rear, I instructed you to stay away from the boy.
A high fever, no appetite, no light, no meat. You see for yourself what that means. I want that boy taken out of this hole and put in the foxhole.
Keep your breath to cool your porridge, sir.
Please, I need air.
He'll be worth nothing as a carcass.
He'll survive to the Americas.
Americas?
Ah, but will he?
You're saying the lad will die?
That's my opinion.
In that case, leave him where he is. He's more trouble than he's worth.
No!
Can you move at all, boy?
He means to kill me.
We'll see about that. Let's get you out of this hole without breaking you in two.
There you go. And my share.
I don't understand.
If you'd perished down below, we'd have kept it.
Captain Hoseason gave us a portion of his veal, £40, for our silence. But seeing as how you're hale, if nae quite hearty, the money's yours.
£40? The money my uncle gave me. That all my life is worth.
It's less than 40 now, laddie. The captain and some of the more close-fisted crewmen are keeping their share alive. Or dead.
At their mercy until we get to America.
There's not much in the way of work these days, even in the Carolinas, what with rebellions. The planters can't trust their blackamoor slaves anymore. So
that's how the captain will make up for his losses.
I'm to be sold. It's slavery.
David, life is all a variorum. Look at me. I'm more than half a doctor, and here I am, man jacked to Hoseason.
I was kept with the sailors for many days, and so came to know my companions. They were a rough lot, men condemned to heave together on the rough seas with cruel masters. Some had sailed with pirates, and had seen things it would be ashamed to speak of. Others had run from the king's ships, and went with a halter round their necks. I was guarded by them on the deck by day, and the forecastle by night, until at last, I know not how many days later...
You boy, run aft. I want you to serve in the roundhouse. Might as well make use of you.
Yes, sir.
This is the most important place on the Covenant.
Sir?
It is where I command from. And when I'm at rest, Mr. Reich...
You serve us our meals and anything else we require.
As soon as we require it. Understand?
Yes, Captain.
The bunks are for me and Riach. You sleep on the blanket on the floor there.
Sir.
Now, fetch us a cup of rum. You'll have one yourself, Mr. Riach.
I will. Over there, lad, by the lockers.
Here.
No, that's where the weapons are kept. You'll find all the victuals in ship stores on the other side, behind you.
In here.
You'll be on call night and day, Davy, but it's easy service, and you eat what we eat, which is a sight better than the men. Oatmeal, porridge, salt, junk, pickles.
Yeah, and a pannikin of rum from time to time, if you're of a mind. You can help yourself to one now.
No, thank you. I do not drink.
Listen to the country boy.
I reckoned by now that the trade winds were at our back, driving us ever nearer to the Americas. It astounded me to hear from Hoseason and Riach's discussions that in fact we were only between Orkney and Shetland, going north about around Scotland. More than a week went by, in which the Covenant made little headway. Some days she was driven actually back. We were beaten so far south that we tossed and tacked within sight of Cape Wrath, the wild and rocky coast on either hand of it.
There she is! She's struck! Captain, we've run a boat down!
What kind of a boat? Man, it's a damned curragh. What is it doing out here?
Throw them a lifeline!
Wouldn't trouble yourselves. They're dead men.
name of God, horses, have you no mercy?
Damned renegades, I reckon.
Help them!
Where's the point in mercy if they're all drowned?
No alive to damn you!
That man's not!
The only survivor was smallish in stature, and as nimble as a goat.
Aye, the pairing of the fog and swell did for us.
His face was sunburnt very dark, and his eyes had a kind of dancing madness in them.
I'm sorely vexed, sir, about your boat. Boy, fill the cups.
I'll need the key.
Aye, be quick.
There are some pretty men gone to the bottom.
It's a wonder that you survived yourself.
I was a passenger in the stern. The rest were rowing.
Still, few men could catch a rope in such a storm. You were with friends.
You have none such friends in your country.
Rum, sir.
Aye, lad.
You have a French soldier's coat upon your back and a Scotch tongue in your head. And a fine sword to boot.
Aye, it is. And is that a problem for you?
So has many an honest fellow these days. And I dare say none the worse for it.
The key, sir.
So, are you of the honest party?
Why, sir, I am a true blue Protestant and I thank God for it. But I can be sorry to see another man with his back to the wall.
What about you, laddie?
Oh, there's importance in what a cabin boy thinks.
Let him speak, no?
My father was a dominie at the Kirk and loyal to King George. I have no reason to question his judgments.
Well, to be plain with you both, I am one of those gentlemen that were in trouble in the years 45 and 6. If I got into the hands of any of the red-coated gentry, it would go hard with me.
Where were you heading?
France. If you can set me ashore there, I have enough upon me to reward you highly for your trouble.
France? No, sir. That I cannot do.
Not one doit of this money belongs to me, but to my chieftain. I'd be a hound if I bought my own carcass too dear. 60 guineas if you set me on the Linny Loch.
And if I give you over to the soldiers?
You would make a fool's bargain. Play me false, Captain, and I'll play you cunning.
Very well. 60 guineas, and done. Here's my hand upon it.
Captain, there are reefs ahead.
Show me, Mr. Rear. You'll excuse us, sir.
Aye to your business, Captain. Your boy here will keep me company and an eye on me.
You do that, David.
You're a Jacobite.
And I knew before I asked, by your long face, you are a Whig.
I'd have thought the long faces would be yours, the defeated party.
You've a spirit about you for such a green loon.
I'd ask you to talk civilly, for I am a Balfour of Shaw's.
Oh, are you now? And I am a Stuart. I bear a king's name. Pleased to make your acquaintance, Balfour of Shaw's.
David.
Alan. Ah.
The bottle's out, David.
Is there another? I'm not a man for much rum, but the sea has froze my bones.
I'll need to request the key.
Call canny, David, lad. I have your back.
We can get the man and talk, one upon each side, and pin him down before he has the time to draw.
He's a pretty enough fellow. I'd rather be armed.
The gentleman is seeking a dram. Will you give me the key?
Captain, there's a chance to get the firearms. You mind I showed you where the pistols are kept, David?
Yes.
Aye, David Kens. David's a good lad. You see, David, my man, yon wild Highland man is a danger to the ship, besides being a rank foe to King George.
All our firelocks are in the roundhouse under his nose. If Captain Hoseason or I was to go in and attempt to take them, he would fall to thinking. And a lad like you, David, might snap up a pistol or two without remark.
I'll bear it in mind when we come to Carolina. More, yon man has a belt full of gold. I give you my word that you shall have your fingers in it.
Understand.
We'll make a seaman of you yet, David.
They're gonna kill you.
What are you saying?
They're all murderers. It's a ship full of them. They stole me from a country. They plan to murder me, but you first.
But they haven't got me yet. Nor you.
I'd hoped for better from Mr. Riach. He saved my life. But now I see only to get a better price for me in the slave auction in Carolina.
A seller is all that matters to folk such as them. But there's hope in numbers, even as few as two. Will you stand with me, Davy?
Well, I'm no traitor to the king. But yes, I'll stand by you. They sent me to bring them firearms.
They're here? And have you the key?
I do.
Well, then our hope is increased. Right, strategy. Three apertures. They could enter by either door or the skylight. You take that door there.
And the one behind you?
Well, so long as that door is open in my face to it, the best part of my enemies will be in front of me, where I would aye wish to find them. Now, let's see the firepower.
In here?
Oh, man, never in all my life have I seen poorer weaponry. Achweel, take the powder horn, the bullets and the pistols there. I'll take up a position here at the door. Now give heed to me when the game begins. Keep charging the pistols.
You can depend on me.
How many are against us?
There are exactly 15 seamen on the Covenant, including Hoseason and Riach.
Well, that can't be cured. Now mind and dare fire to this side unless they get me down. I'd rather have 10 foes in front of me than one friend like you cracking pistols at my back.
It's true, I'm no great shot, Mr. Stewart.
That's bravely said.
The door here. Couldn't they break in behind us?
They could. And that is part of your work. Each time you've charged the pistols, you make yourself handy there.
And keep guard of the skylight too.
Yeah, we'll make a bonny factor of you yet. Now, the greatest part of warfare is patience. We wait. Be ready.
And that is how it came to pass that I found myself, at 17 years of age, the son of a poor country dominie in the forest of Ettrick, on the high seas, with gunpowder on my hands, in cahoots with a wild Highland rebel. My chest was tight, my mouth dry. The thought of the numbers that were soon to leap in upon us kept my heart in a flutter. And the sea washing round the brig. I couldn't help but imagine my dead body floating in it by morning.
Our moment has come, David. Pistol and cutlass at the ready. Stand, Captain!
A naked sword and loaded pistol. Strange return for hospitality.
You see this blade? It has slashed the heads of mere whigamores than you have toes upon your feet. Call up your vermin to your bank, sir, and fall on. The sooner the clash begins, the sooner you'll taste this steel through your vitals.
David! David Balfour! Do you hear me?
I do.
I'll mind this. Take him, lads!
Mr. Balfour of Shaws! Let your hand keep your head! The battle is now! Have on! Hey! Keep a civil tongue, gentlemen! King George will be ashamed of you! Keep the powder dry yet, David! I'll keep them at bay!
My heart beat like a bird's. As for hope, I had none. Only a darkness of despair and a sort of anger against the world that made me long to sell my life as dear as I was able.
Look to your window! They have the yardarm!
I had never fired with a pistol in my life. Far less against a fellow creature. But it was now or never.
Take that!
I must have hit one of them. Before he had time to recover, I sent another ball over their heads. At my third shot, the whole party threw down the yard and ran for it. The roundhouse was full of the smoke of my own firing, and my ears burst with the noise of the shots. But there was Alan, his sword running blood to the hilt, and so swelled with triumph that he looked to be invincible. Before him on the floor was a sailor, on his hands and knees, blood pouring from his mouth, sinking slowly lower with a terrible white face.
David, have you taken one at all?
I winged one.
Then I've settled two. There's not enough blood left. They'll be back again. To your watch, David, lad. This was but a dram before the meat.
There was nothing to be done but listen and wait. Our enemies were disputing not far off on the deck. Then I heard a man drop softly onto the roof above me. The sea pipe. That was a signal.
I tried to help you. Break it!
The skylight was smashed, and a man leapt through. Before he got to his feet, I clapped a pistol to his back.
Get the pistol!
But at the touch of him, my flesh misgave me, and I could no more pull the trigger than I could have flown. He whipped round and laid hold of me.
You're from the watery grave, sonny lad!
No! Go off! No!
When he had me, his cutlass gleaming. Either my courage came again, or I grew so afraid as came to the same thing. I shot him in the middle of the body. He gave the most horrible, ugly groan and fell to the floor. Over by Alan, the door was thronged with fevered faces. I thought we were lost, but I took up my cutlass and stood in flank beside my companion.
Good man, David. Alan Breck Stewart is fierce when roused. Get out of the
At every flash, there came the scream of a man hurt. I was still thinking we were lost when, lo, Alan was driving them along the deck like a dog chasing sheep. We heard them tumble one upon the other into the forecastle and close the hatch. The roundhouse was a shambles. Two men had paid the piper. Another lay in his death agony across the threshold. And there were Alan and I, victorious and unhurt.
Come to my arms.
David, I love you like a brother.
Good old man. Am I not a bonny fighter? Right, let's be done with these fellows.
Then he passed his sword clean through each of the wounded and tumbled them out the door. All the while, his eyes were as bright as a child's.
Right. Yeah. Help me. They can bury their own at sea.
What are our winnings, brother?
What, the three you killed, Davy lad, plus the five of mine, outright or mortally wounded.
I don't think of four more that are hurt, at least one by my hand.
Bravo, brother. Still, they may be foolish enough to come at us again. I'll take the first watch. Oh, you've done well by me, David. I wouldn't lose you for all of Appin's land.
After 3 hours, Alan roused me and I took my watch, pistol in hand and sword on knee, before the end of which it was broad day.
I have something for you, my friend.
No, you ruin your coat. They are top button, it won't look so grand.
These are more than buttons, Davy. They were my father's, Duncan Stewart's. I give you one of them now as a keepsake for last night's brave work. Wherever you go, you show that button, and the friends of Alan Breck will come round you.
Gentlemen, David, can we parley?
As I expected. Are you armed, Mr. Riach?
I am not. See for yourself.
Open the door, Davy.
Do you trust them?
I do not.
Good morning, Mr. Riach.
This is a bad job.
It was none of our choosing.
The captain would like to speak with your friend.
And how do we know what treachery he means?
He means none, David. Even if he did, I'd tell him the honest truth. Could we get the men to follow? We all of us need shot at that wild healing man.
We talked a whole season.
We have to parley eventually.
Tell the captain to step forward.
Put away your pistols, gentlemen. I give my word, we are for parley.
Captain, last night you gave me your word and your hand to back it. And you came very well the upshot. Your word be damned.
You've made a sore hash of my brig. I haven't enough hands to work her. There is nothing left me, sir, but to put back into the port of Glasgow. There, I am sure, you will find some of your own kind.
Aye. I'll have a bonny tale for them. 15 tarry sailors upon the one side and a man and a halfling boy upon the other. Oh, man, it's pitiful. No, Glasgow is too dangerous. You set me ashore as we agreed.
Mr. Shewan is dead by yon boy's hand. There's none of the rest of us acquaint with this coast, and it's a dangerous one to ships.
I give you your choice. Set me on dry ground anywhere but the country of the Campbells. That's a broad target. If you miss that, you must be as feckless a sailor as a fighter.
That would cost money, sir.
60 guineas, as I promised, if you set me by the Linny Loch.
It's the risk of the brig, sir, and your own lives along with her.
Take it or want it.
Could you pilot us at all?
I'm more of a fighting man than a sailor man, but I have been often enough picked up and set down upon this coast, and ken something of the lie of it.
In other circumstances, I'd see you in a rope's end before I'd risk my brig. But be it as ye will. As soon as I get a slant of wind, I'll put it in hand.
For the rest of the day, we sailed like gentlemen or officers. We had all the wine and small beer and the best of the eatables, pickles and fine breads.
Ah, look you there. The Isle of Canna. And on that side, Eriskay.
So we're faring well for Loch Linney?
I believe so.
I'm confounded by your ease, Alan Breckstuart. You're a fugitive risking death in your own country.
If the Redcoats got hands on me, it would be a short shrift and a lang tow for Alan.
And what brings you back to Scotland? It's a braving of Providence.
Oh, I've been back every year since 46. France is a braw place, but how I weary for the heather and the deer and my people. And I have things to attend to, recruitment and rents for my chief, Archheel.
I don't understand.
My chieftain is forced to bide now in a French town like a beggar. He who had 400 swords at his whistle. The tenants of Appin have to pay a rent to King George, but their hearts are staunch and they're true to their chief. The poor folk will scrape up a second rent for Archheel. And I'm the hand that carries it.
They pay two rents?
Aye, David, they do.
I call it noble. I'm a Whig, but I call it noble.
Aye, you're a Whig, but you're a gentleman. Now, if you were one of the cursed race of Campbell, if you were the Red Fox...
The Red Fox? Who's he?
You see, when the clans were broken at Culloden, Davy, and the good cause went down, the English rogues stripped us of our lands, plucked our weapons, aye, and the very clothes of our backs, so that it's now a sin to wear a tartan plaid. And a man may be cast into jail if he has but a kilt about his legs. And all of it commandeered by a Campbell, red-headed Colin of Glenure.
The Red Fox?
That's the man. In he steps, the so-called King's Factor, on the lands of Appin. There grows not enough heather in Scotland to hide him from my vengeance.
Alan, words of anger will do the Red Fox no harm, and yourself no good. If you killed this man tomorrow, what better would you be? There'll be another factor in his shoes.
You're a good lad in a fight, but man, you have Whig blood in you.
I'm wondering how, with the Highlands covered with troops, you come and go without a rest.
Well, it's better than it was in 46. Now that the Highlands are what they call pacified, the heather's a great help. I have fished in a burn with a sentry on the other side of the brae and caught a fine trout. And I've sat in a heather bush within 6 feet of another and learned a real bonny tune from his whistling.
Mr. Stewart, come out and see if you can pilot.
Is this one of your tricks?
I've no time for tricks. My brig's in danger. See that?
Aye, the sea breaking on a reef. So now you know where it is, no?
Aye, if it was the only one. If I had kent of these reefs, it's not 60 guineas, no, nor 600 would have made me risk my brig in sick a stone yard.
It's what they call the Torran Rocks.
Are there many of them?
It sticks in my mind there are 10 miles of them.
There's a way through.
It also runs in my mind that it's clearer close to the land.
A holler one, Mr. Reeve. Well, as near the end of Mull as we can take her. We're in for it now, and may as well crack on.
The sea to the south, inspect. It does seem clearer in by the land.
Oh, go on, David. This is no the kind of death I fancy.
Alan Breckstuart, you're not afraid.
You'll allow yourself. It's a cold ending.
Clear water ahead!
And that's a blessing.
speak to Lundberg!
Plain sailing ahead.
Quickly now! All round!
You have saved the brig, sir. I'll mind that when we come to clear accounts.
All round! Our engine forward!
I can see them! The rocks!
Speak to Lundberg, I say!
Turn up faster, the upper coast! And up keel hole, y'all!
Faster!
I went down and drank my fill and then came up and got a blink of the moon and then down again. They say a man sinks a third time for good. I cannot be made like other folk, for I lost count how often I went down and came up again. The whole thing was so distracting to my wits that I was neither sorry nor afraid. I kicked out for all my life until, by some miracle, I got into quiet waters of a sandy bay. Dry land, and I could wade ashore, alive, but in a place more desolate than I'd ever seen. There was no sign of the brig, which must have lifted from the reef and sunk. I stood in the rain and shivered, more dead than alive. Later I discovered the island was called Erid. The time I spent there is still so horrible a thought to me that I must pass it lightly over. I survived for 4 days on limpets, devouring them cold and raw. I never stopped walking from one end of the isle to the other, day and night, searching for a way to escape it. There was no shelter, and the rain never let up. I grew to despise that cold, horrid solitude of that empty island. My clothes rotted. My throat was so sore I could scarce swallow. I had fits of shuddering, and I suffered an endless nausea.
Help! Over here! Help me!
On the fourth day, I was rescued by a fisherman, just as I was giving up all hope.
Oh, thank you. Thank God.
I saw you here yesterday.
You saw me? Why didn't you rescue me?
Rescue you? Why didn't you walk off the rock?
Walk?
What kind of a queer creature are you? Erid is a tidal islet. You can walk the mull twice a day over the causeway at low tide.
There are wicked men and fools, and they both get paid in the end. But the fools first. I was freed from the island, but my days of lonely trudging were far from over. I was young, untravelled, and not deeply learned, and thrown into the wild lands and strange people of the north. From one island, I found myself only on a bigger one. Mull, it was called, and it was there I finally heard the fate of the Covenant.
The brig that dunched the rocks. I am given to understand that they took a drenching but made dry land.
Was the one dressed like a gentleman?
I believe so. The one that came ashore alone. Oh, he, they say, wore breeches and stockings, while the rest had sailor's trews.
Does this token mean anything to you?
You are the lad with the silver button. Well, then, I have a word for you. You are to follow your friend to his country by Torosay.
If these were the wild Highlanders, I wished my own folk wilder. It was 50 miles to Torosay as the crow flies, nearer 100 with my wanderings. Throughout my days of walking, trudging in rain and shine, through bogs and over rivers, I was shown kindness by people who were clearly in great poverty. Sometimes when I asked the way to Torosay, they would give me a screed of the Gaelic. It was small wonder if I went out of my road as often as I stayed in it. I finally found this Torosay, and from there was instructed to take a ferry to Kinloch Allen. And there, I was directed to a man by the name of Neil Roy.
I'm seeking somebody. Alan Breck Stewart.
The man you ask for is in France.
He recognized this button, sir.
Ah. Now, there is a name that you should never take into your mouth, and that is the name of Alan Breck. But if you are the lad with the silver button, I have the word to see that he comes safe.
Are you one of Appin's men?
And what for no? Your route is set out tomorrow. Lie the night in Kinlochalan in the public inn. Cross to Morven the next day and lie the night in the house of John of the Cremo, who is expecting you.
I see.
The day after, sit across one loch at Corran and another at Balahurish, and then ask your way to Ocham in Appin.
I will follow the instructions to the letter.
A wee bit counsel before you set out. Speak with no one. Avoid wigs, tams, and redcoats. Leave the road and lie in a bush if you see any such coming.
In other words, conduct myself like a common robber.
Or noble Jacobite.
I had not dared to believe it at first. It seemed to me dubious in the extreme that anyone could have survived the sinking of the Covenant. But they had. And Alan was alive, if far away. And he had remembered me. My friend had half the Highlands on the lookout for me. The journey across bracken and tracks and lochs was just how it had been planned out for me. Until on the last day I was being rowed from the Linney Loch to Loch Leven.
When we set on land, I'll show you the road to James of the Glens.
And that gentleman is?
The brother of Ard Shiel, a man much looked up to. The captain of the clan of Alan Breck.
I've heard his name. What of him?
Oh, he's here in the Wah. A fair heather cut. He might be glowering at the two of us out of yon windbush, and I wouldna wonder. A bold, desperate customer. His life is forfeit already. He would boggle at nothing.
A true Highlander. I've seen much to admire in them.
Aye. But some are Campbells and agents of King George. Colin Campbell of Glenure is making trouble. Put in his head in a bee's bike, if you ask me.
He's to turn the tenants out by force, I hear.
The first of the tenants are to flip tomorrow.
Will they resist?
Well, they're queer customers, the Appin Stuarts.
As we neared the banks, the mountains on either side were high, rough and barren, gloomy in the shadow of the clouds. It seemed a hard country, this of Appin. My first morning in that broad country, I was resting by the wayside, the midges singing, and had a long view of the road down which I watched two horsemen approach. Just behind the front rider was a lawyer. I recognised him easy by his black garb and white wig, but the gentleman with him had a tartan jacket on. Once again, my youth and foolishness got the better of me. I know now that tartan to be of the Argyll or Campbell colours. On that morning, I simply saw a Highlander, men I had come to love and trust. He was a great, red-headed gentleman of an imperious and flushed face. Had I spied a moment earlier the platoon of 20 soldiers bringing up their rear, I may have remained hidden. Pardon me for delaying you, but I have to be at Ocharan.
Here we are on serious business, and a child starts up out of the bracken and spears if we are on the way to Ocharan.
Glenure, it's an ill subject for jesting. And what seek you in Ocharan?
Just news of a friend, sir.
Well now, in the glen of Ocharan there is only one house of note. Your friend is James Stuart. James of the Glens?
Yes, James, gathering his people.
Perhaps we should convoy this callant and spear for ourselves.
So you may understand, gentlemen, I am neither of his people nor yours, but an honest subject of King George, owing no man and fearing no man.
Well spoken, lad. But if I may make so bold to ask, why would an honest man be so far from his country? And what does he want with a rebel Stuart?
No more than to find my way home to the lowlands, sir.
I am the king's factor with 20 soldiers at my back. Now, if ye had asked me the way to the door of a Stuart on any other day but this, I would have set you right and bidden ye Godspeed. But you have picked troubled times.
Ah! What was that? Glenure?
I'm hit! Da!
Glenure!
The shot came from over there. You can still find the assassin. See him. Look! A man in a black coat. There in the birches above. I see him.
Stand where you are.
It's not too late. Follow me.
I said halt. £10 for any soldier that takes that boy. He's an accomplice. He was supposed to be here to hold us in talk.
No! I'm trying to help.
After him, men!
I confess, my heart came in my mouth with a new kind of terror. The soldiers began to spread, some of them to run, and others to put up their pieces to shoot at me. I heard the firelocks bang and the bullets whistle in the birches. Then, just inside the shelter of the trees, I spied a figure, standing there calm, a fishing rod in his hand.
David! Over here! Come on!
Alan?
It was like a vision. My mind finally wrecked by all that had befallen me.
Do as I do, David. For your life.
In Kidnapped by Robert Louis Stevenson, dramatised by Chris Dolan, David Balfour was played by Owen Whitelaw, Alan Breck by Michael Nardoni, Ebenezer, David Heyman, Hoseason, Lewis Howden, Rioch, Gavin Mitchell, Glenn Ewer, Sean Scanlon, Lawyer, Kenny Blythe, and The Landlord by Alan McHugh. Other parts were played by the cast. Kidnapped is a BBC Scotland production directed in Glasgow by Bruce Young.